Okay, reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 1, Chapter 4, Text 4. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Asya putra mahayogi samadvin nirvikalpaka ekantamatya amidro gudho gudho vivayate. His Vyasadeva's son was a great devotee, an equal balanced monist. His mind was always concentrated in monism. He was transcendental to mundane activities, but being unexposed, he appeared like an ignorant person. Purport. Srila Sukadeva Goswami was a liberated soul, and thus he remained always alert not to be trapped by the illusory energy. In the Bhagavad Gita, this alertness is very lucidly explained. The liberated soul and the conditioned soul have different engagements. The liberated soul is engaged in the progressive path of spiritual attainment, which is something like a dream for the conditioned soul. The conditioned soul cannot imagine the actual engagements of the liberated soul. While the conditioned soul thus dreams about spiritual engagements, the liberated soul is awake. Similarly, the engagement of a conditioned soul appears to be a dream for the liberated soul. Conditioned soul and liberated soul may apparently be on the same platform, but factually they are differently engaged, and their attention is always alert, either in sense enjoyment or self-realization. The conditioned soul is absorbed in matter, whereas the liberated soul is completely indifferent to matter. This indifference is explained as follows. Om Gyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Taksu Nvitanyena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Gushtam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Chayam Rupa Kadamayam Yadati Svapadantikam Vanshakalpa Karubhyascha Vitashindubhayevacha Atitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudeva Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So greetings from Vrindavan. It's been a very, Vrindavan is just, I just have to say it, it's just absolutely no place like it in the world. It's just amazing. Today we went past Keshigat, and went with Gita Nagari, Shastra, Bhagavad Purana, and my assistant, Alex. And now they have a little bridge over the Jamuna. You know, in Vrindavan, I went for lunch today at some of this Gopal Lodge, and there's a whole new section of Vrindavan called Chaitanya Vihar, which is basically, it's like Delhi. And I went on top of the roof of this four-story house, and I looked out, and I saw these seven-story apartment buildings, of course, mixed with temples, and, you know. So Vrindavan is just so rapidly growing. But, you know, I crossed to the other side of the river, which is like, you know, it's not even a wide river. It's 10, 15 yards. You just go right over that river from the main part of the city, and there is not a building in sight. It's just miles and miles and miles of rich, green farm fields with winding paths. And it was just... So we walked 5 kilometers. I mean, there wasn't a building in sight until we got to Manasarovara, which is a beautiful lake in the middle of the fields with beautiful birds. And of course, it's some kind of story of pastime with... We are out to dance, which is across the side of the river. Anyway, it's just beautiful, and you feel the wind, and you just feel so purified. And the weather was ideal. And it's just another world. But you really feel that everything, every color, every sound... every taste, everything you touch, you feel that everything is intentionally to the pleasure of Krishna. Everything is loving, and you actually feel it when you're here. It's just a whole other world that cannot be replicated in any place else. Especially when you walk in Vrindavan and chant and engage in devotional service. So let's discuss today's verse. To give you context of the Bhagavatam, it's the beginning of Kali Yuga. And just as there's four seasons, there's, you know, millenniums. And, you know, just like I know in the, you know, 3-4 months it'll be hot, and you're in the summer, and 3-4 months it'll be cold. You can see that there's influences of, and actually, you know, we can see Kali Yuga progressing. Even when Vyasadeva, we're going to be reading about him, when Vyasadeva is, has to edit the Vedas, and he's envisioning. You know, it's at the beginning of Kali Yuga, and he's envisioning what the condition of the world will be, because according to the condition of the world, the consciousness of the people, then the presentation has to be tailored. And that's what someone who is a teacher or with realization does. You know, he sees that, first of all, people will be faithless, which puts one in a quandary if they want to learn, because without faith, you can't possibly see or understand anything that's beyond your own present frame of reference. And so much of reality is beyond what we can presently see and understand. You're stuck in that way. I think it's William James. Is it William or Henry? No, William James, the psychologist. He wrote the Varieties of Religious Experience. He said if the boy wants to understand that a girl loves him, he first has to assume that he does. If he doesn't make that assumption, he can't act and find out. So it's something like that. Unless you have some faith in some truth, you can never realize it. You don't know, but unless you have some confidence, you can never find out what you don't know. So when people are faithless because people in authority have disappointed them, it's really unfortunate. And a proper culture, you know, is really careful to protect positions by having requirements of qualification for them. And a pressure and responsibility to live up to a certain standard. A proper culture does that. Father is supposed to be a father, and a teacher is supposed to be a teacher, and the head of a government is supposed to be a head of a government, and responsibility, which means there's a certain standard that you have to live up to. And the samskaras are instilled in one for that kind of integrity. Because if people don't live up to their responsibilities, then people become faithless. And people can't learn. And therefore there's that verse, Acharya Mam Vijaniyam Nava Manyate Kari Chit, you should worship the Acharya's very self. And my surprise when I find out the real meaning, and when I find out some of the commentaries on that verse, is the Acharya. It's the parents. It's the teacher. It's the husband. It's whatever it is. It's anybody in a position of authority. And in the real culture, they are God. And respect them. And so it was a great responsibility. And people were, the positions of authority were idealized. And I don't know if that's the right word exactly. And people were encouraged to trust. And that would be, you know, faith is it's a mechanism of the mind. It's a nature, it's a faculty of the mind that allows one to explore beyond one's present level of perception and understanding. And it's just like coming to Krishna consciousness. I mean, our faith is based on a certain experience, but we will never be open to that experience, or it's unlikely we'll be open to that experience, or it'll be unlikely we'll remain open to that experience, unless there's some reason and reasonability and understanding that gives us the impetus or inspiration or trust to open ourselves to that experience. So the faith is more the experience than the intellectual understanding. But without some kind of reasonability to give us trust, we'll never have that experience. Anyway, getting back to the story, at the beginning of the Kali Yuga, the sages are seeing the future and seeing that there'll be opposition to spiritual life. I don't want to repeat too much what I did last week. And they want to know what to do. And the resource is there. But a resource doesn't have value unless there's someone who knows what's in the resource and knows what part of the resource is applicable to the problems or difficulties you have. And I always give the example of a pharmacy. The medicine is there, but it doesn't have value to you unless there's someone who can negotiate between your condition and the medicine you require, so they can select. So the Acharya selects from the scriptures. So the Vedas are there, and people know the Vedas are there, but they need an Acharya or a teacher to pick out what's relevant to their particular condition. So the sages of Namasharanya are there. They ask various questions, and then they... Last question, now that Krishna has left the planet, with knowledge and religion, where will he presently be, where will that presently be maintained? And the answer is the Bhagavatam. It's just such an interesting point. And Sukhi says, yes, the answer to your question, it's the Bhagavatam, which is it's brilliant to the sun. And when it was spoken, I was there, I heard it, and I realized it. And the sage and Namasharanya are very excited because not only had someone heard something of substance and value, but he claimed to have realized it, and therefore they understood that he had the ability to communicate it. And without realization, you really can't communicate. And realization means a depth of an understanding of the subject. Usually by understanding that subject and applying that subject. And then you actually see that subject in a depth of way that allows you to reform its presentation to suit the audience without losing its intent or meaning. And I've discussed this many times. I don't have to speak this in more depth. And then the sages of Namasharanya being excited for hearing something from someone who can make it relevant and understandable to them. And that's life. That's life. We don't transform unless we get the right ideas. And therefore, to be connected or hear from someone who has those ideas and who can explain them, that's how people transform. That's the purpose of knowledge. That's the purpose of teachers. They have the right ideas, and they not only have the right ideas, but they can communicate them to you and impress upon you their significance in a way in which you'll embrace those ideas, apply those ideas, and change your mind. That's how human society evolves to a higher level of consciousness. Those good ideas come from the Shastra, and one who can negotiate between your condition and the teachings. So that's what everyone wants. That's the most important thing in life. That's why, you know, in Krishna consciousness, you know, any successful center should have an economic base. This is just simple varnashram. It should have administration. But it should also have teachers. And that, you know, everything is to support that. A church or a temple, you know, there's a facility, but the facility is to support the dissemination of knowledge. And that's so important in the society. It's the most important function in a society. So we're eager to hear from Sita and the sages of Namasharanya, because it's still at the beginning of Kali Yuga, and Vyas got his inspiration at the beginning of Kali Yuga, and Maharaj Prickett being cursed by the Brahmin boy was the beginning of Kali Yuga, which is a beautiful concept. That young Brahmin boy curses Maharaj Prickett. He has power but no culture. Misuse of power due to a lack of culture. That's the beginning of all degradation in any social unit. That's, and in the millennium itself of Kali Yuga, that's how it began. When power is divorced from culture, then havoc is wrecked. So it's already spoken. First of all, it's already realized by Vyasadeva at the beginning of the millennium, Kali Yuga. It's taught to his son at the beginning of the millennium. Maharaj Prickett specifically is cursed at the beginning of the millennium and enlightened by Sukadeva Goswami. And now the sages of Namasharanya shortly after that are meeting, and they've been having this sacrifice. Probably while all this has been happening, they're having this very, very, you know, prolonged sacrifice at the beginning of the age, and specifically to counteract the influence of the age. And the age is specifically in opposition to spiritual life. In opposition to spiritual life are anything that moves one to the concept that the sublimity or goal of life is to center oneself and have more power to control things and objects and people around them for their own satisfaction. And that's promoted as a good idea. It's so insidious. What is actually promoted in a Kali Yuga, a culture that's in opposition to spiritual life. What is promoted is a car that can make you more powerful, you know, a cigarette that can attract more sex life, a perfume that can make you more alluring, and so many other things, and role models that inspire you in sex life and bravado, all things that increase the material conception of life. So, the sages of Namasharanya are seeing these forces, just as we can see these forces now. And they want to do something about it, so they perform sacrifice. In Gurujan's commentary on this, he said, sacrifice is the mark of a sage, and it's what makes one a sage. And what is sacrifice? It's sacrificing the ego, which means the endorsement of oneself in the center and the control of objects to that are moving that the control of objects to move appropriately around one whose desire becomes the center of existence in their consciousness or mind. And therefore, anyway, it's contemporary, they're performing sacrifice. So when they put Sita on the sea and they therefore ask him really more details about what had happened, you know, I don't know, within a couple of hundred years or something, or, you know, somewhat contemporary to what they're doing, because it's at the beginning of Kali Yuga, I'm not sure exactly, but it's contemporary enough that they know something about it, but it's distant enough that they don't know much detail about it. So they're asking for the detail about it. And so they asked about Vyasadeva, where did he get his inspiration? Because his task was so deep and it really took inspiration. It really took some special inspiration, because what he had to do is take this vast body of knowledge and negotiate the communication of that knowledge between people who had little qualification to understand it. And so now, in today's verse, so they asked about Vyas, now they're asking about Sukadeva Goswami, and they begin to describe him, because the story of the Bhagavatam is very intriguing. The story of the Vyasadeva's inspiration is intriguing. The story of his son's enlightenment is intriguing. It is very intriguing. And the story of King Maharaj Prickett's renunciation of the world at the end of his life is also very intriguing. So he was a monist, and he was always fixed in oneness. So that was one thing. He was fixed, and he was transcendental, but he was hidden, because he appeared like an ignorant person. So the commentary is that may be in the view of a person who has a different perspective, which is material. So you have a different faith, and therefore you may not be able to recognize someone who is elevated. But internally, there's so much, their attention is... Basically, it says a conditioned soul, their attention is alert in sense gratification, how I can be the center, and the sage is alert in self-realization, how I can serve the center. And therefore, the conditioned soul is absorbed in matter, because the principle of matter is the facility to give oneself the illusion that one is the center. That's why if you don't understand properly the relationship between the soul and body, it's hard to develop a relationship with God. It's difficult to develop a relationship with God, because if you don't at least theoretically understand that and perform some sacrifice of austerity to detach oneself from that concept, if that's what you think the self is, the body and the mind, you will think yourself as something separate from God. false ego puts you in a conception of mind that doesn't allow you to recognize God. So, so liberated soul, when you're liberated, you're indifferent to that. The body is moving, but you are not identifying with moving yourself. Like, this is what a liberated soul is. He moves, he does not move. In other words, the nodes are moving and everything is moving and desires may be there, but you're abstracted from them. You don't see that as you. Even to the extent, you know, you may feel something. There may be pains. There may be pleasures. There may be desires. But you're extracted enough that you don't move by them. And if you don't have that understanding, you have that identification, then whatever happens in the body and the mind, you are moved by. You desire this, and you really feel them, therefore you should fulfill it. Because you think that that's the self and the satisfaction of the self. So here you get the image, and this is the sage of Namashrana described, is someone who's so hidden. And you'll see, he's acting like he is ignorant. In a social way. Move on to the next word.
Vishvanuyantam Misham Atmajam Apyanagam Devyo Priya Paribhidurna Sutasya Chitram Tad Vikshya Pichitimano Jagadista Vasti Sri Pumbhidha Natu Sutasya Vivikta Jushtai. While Vyasadeva was following his son, beautiful young damsels who were bathing naked covered their bodies with cloth, although Sri Vyasadeva himself was not naked. But they had done so when his son had, but they had not done so when his son had passed. The sage inquired about this, and the young ladies replied that his son was purified, and when looking at them, made no distinction between male and female, but the sage made such distinctions. So again, this is the intrigue about Sukadeva Goswami. He's so the son when he passed, he was young and he was beautiful, and the young ladies did not cover themselves, but when Vyasadeva did, they covered themselves, which is kind of an interesting fact because Vyasa is an incarnation of God. But it's just showing that he's so not identified with the body that he doesn't see anything as an object. He doesn't have any desires, actually. And he's completely free from sex desire. So he's not even influenced by the beautiful naked forms of women. And he has no desire to enjoy them. So what it's saying is, they are picking up on his consciousness. And therefore, because somehow or other, he's not, you know, it's just like I went to Radhakund, and somehow it was a very, very quiet, day. It's hardly anybody there. So two ladies came, and they wanted to go bathing in Radhakund, and somehow I gave them permission, and they went to the other side. And it was a place with ladies bathe, but there were some young men there. And they came back. They said, we can't do this because of the way the people were looking. Well, usually when you're in Radhakund, actually what happens is so many people are there that they're kind of in the spiritual consciousness, so the women go behind this thing and they change. But they don't feel that energy. So somehow or other, he was so advanced. Sukadeva Goswami. He had no attraction to anything. Well, now, Vyasadeva also is advanced, but is what's going to be mentioned in the purport. Because he was a householder, he had to make such distinctions, playing the part of a householder. He had to make these distinctions between male and female. And to function in that role. But Sukadeva Goswami did not have to make those distinctions because he was in the role of a dude. He was actually not in any social situation that required him to make distinctions. It's just like it says that a Mahabhagavat, the topmost devotee, to preach, he has to make distinctions. It's functional. Because to preach, to help people, he can't just be in his bhav. There's two things. There's how you feel and how you think. On one sense, the devotee thinks everyone is serving Krishna better than myself. You can actually be in that. You can see through the heart. You can see through the lens of absolute humility. Because you're feeling it. You're so conscious of God. And being conscious of God means to be conscious of the glories of God. And to be conscious of your relative insignificance in relationship to God. So, you can legitimately develop a bhava, a mood, and see through that lens, a mood of happy smallness, a mood of humility, which allows you to that to see everyone as guru. But there's also the function of the intellect, which can make discrimination. And one is a Mahabhagavat and wants to preach, he has to go to that platform to make discrimination. And similarly, there are people that are completely transcendental, and their karmic situation is they don't socially interact with the world. And they're not required. And they don't make distinctions in that world. And therefore, the perception of such a person did not make one self-conscious because he's not seeing it that way. Somehow or other, the ladies can pick up on that. But Vyas, having a social position, even though he's transcendental,
he has to make those distinctions. And therefore, anyway, it's not so much pointing out that Dias was in advance, it's pointing out the situation of Sukadeva Goswami, who's transcendental to sex relations. And the ladies, by their special qualification, can sense this, and therefore they weren't concerned. Even though the boy was naked, he was 16 years old, all the parts of his body were developed, the ladies could understand the mind of a man by studying his demeanor. And just looking at him, they can see he was completely innocent and making no distinction. Kitamalakshita purai samprapta kuru jangalam unmita mukajaravad vicharandajushabhaye. How was he, Srila Sukadeva Goswami, the son of Vyas, recognized by the citizens when he entered the city of Hastinapur? Now, after wandering in the province of Kuru and jungle, appearing like a madman, dumb and retarded, how do they recognize him? He's unmata, that means crazy. Mukha means like a fool. And jadavat means like retarded. So how do they recognize? And the purport is very interesting. He's so exalted, but how do you recognize him? And therefore it says that ultimately a sage is recognized by sight, by hearing, and that we should approach a sage and primarily gauge them by what they say and the realization in which they say it. And if one is not prepared to hear the words of a sadhu, then you really can't get benefit from them. And Sukadeva Goswami, having studied and realized the Bhagavatam from his father, he could speak on transcendental activities. He was recognized as the most elevated personality once they heard the level of his realizations. And because he was so detached from the body and mind, it was, must have been so wonderful to hear from him because of the conviction in which he can speak. One's words carry one's convictions, and one's convictions are based upon one's realization. And one's realizations are based on one's application of the philosophy. The application of the philosophy is based on what one has understood and realized. So when he spoke, it's a certain quality to a voice of conviction that makes one take seriously what someone else says. So despite externally looking in particular ways, he was, they understood him by this. Okay, are there any questions? I'll stop there for today. Right now, in Davin, I'm giving two classes a day. And just a few very serious people, especially in the morning. There's about 5-6 people that are brilliant, really brilliant. And I'm reading from a book called Bhakti Yoga, where it's describing the six Obstacles to Devotional Service by Bhakti Mehta Thakur. It's very deep. And I'm reading it, but I'm asking other people to speak and resolve different contradictions and what their opinions are. I'm speaking then, and then the Bhagavad Gita at 4 o'clock again. Very select group. Anybody's welcome, but I don't really promote it. Anyway, are there any questions? Oh, I got to change the mode before that happens. Excuse me.
Thank you. Hi, Krishna Maharaj. This is Gail.
Hi, Bo. Yeah.
I have a question, but what did you say you're reading by Bhaktivinoda Thakur now?
Bhakti Alok.
Bhakti Alok.
Yeah, great book. Incredible book. Really so deep.
Hmm. Can you say anything about it at all?
It's analyzing the six obstacles to devotional service, over-collecting, over-endeavor, being either not following the rules or attached to them solely for the sake of rules. Prajalpa, idle talk, associating with worldly-minded people, but he analyzes them in such an incredible way. Probably each paragraph is just a very interesting, every sentence is an interesting point as he analyzes the application. I really don't have the brain power right now to kind of be in my mind and say so much more about it.
No, that's what I wanted. That's what I just wanted that. But I just wanted to ask you, I just wanted to confirm that when you were talking about, I think you were saying that the stages of Naimisharanya, was it the Bhagavatam that was like, or was it the Bhagavatam that was like contemporary in one from one angle, but, you know, distant from another?
Well, I'm speculating a little bit, but based on this reasoning, they heard about the Bhagavatam, but they didn't know much details about it. And therefore, they're asking for the details. So I'm assuming from that it was a contemporary thing, but not contemporary enough so they knew so much about it. Or something like that. Or maybe it was just spoken and they hadn't heard about it. But one way or another, the most important point was is they had heard about it, but they didn't know about it in detail. And therefore, now they're asking about it in detail.
Yeah. Okay. And I just want to say that it was nice to have you, to hear you answer with so much thoroughness the very question that I would have asked you, which was about the, you know, the comparison of Vyasadeva and Shukadeva, you know, with respect to the girls. Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
you gave me everything.
You gave me everything that I wanted.
Yeah.
To. Yeah. So it was like I had asked you, and then you answered me. Yeah. So that was nice. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, Gail, program it at the 8th at Gopi Kishore's at 2 p.m.
Oh, I know, 2 o'clock, Maharaj.
Okay, I got it. Okay, anybody else like to say hello or ask a question?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj, it's Hanan.
Hanan, Hare Krishna.
I had a question if you have time.
I do have time.
I found what you said about having to have some initial faith as we start to progress, and then you spoke a little bit about how dangerous it is for authorities to disappoint. And I was wondering if you can share maybe some thoughts how the individual, how someone who is practicing devotional service and maybe his faith get weak or get disappointed, what are ways that he can support his devotional service when he in this kind of situation?
After one loses faith, you say?
Not loses his faith completely, but kind of start to doubt. I speak from my own experience. Doing a lot of management, sometimes I feel a little bit fatigued or tired with management dealing and things like this. So how one can strengthen his faith when he sees different things?
Wow, how do you strengthen the faith? Well, I think the first thing is we have to have an internal desire for spiritual authority to manifest that's not just superior by position, but truly superior by realization and knowledge. So I think there has to be an internal desire, and then we have to hear. And by hearing, we have to search for that voice of knowledge. And then after finding that voice of knowledge, then we have to engage with it in a way that that authority is confirmed. And that experience will develop these samskaras of trust. And the most difficult thing in the present age is that so many, the qualities, faith is a problem. The Kali Yuga, in the Satya Yuga, there was no deity worship because a Brahmin would manifest God in the heart to the degree that he was purified and elevated. And therefore, a purified Brahmin could be worshipped because the deity is a vehicle for the manifestation of God. So you can worship a person as a perfect, transparent medium, vehicle for God. And therefore, there was no need for the deities because of not only the qualification of the people, but the qualification of the people who are receptacles of God, the pure Brahmins, but the faithful nature of the people who are, seeking God and worshiping others. But in Treta Yuga already, that level of trust couldn't be there because the people weren't as qualified to invoke that level of trust and have that samskara within. Although there was some, but the general thing, already it was reduced, and the people weren't as faithful to begin with. Therefore, the sages established deity worship to make an absolute, to make an absolute receptacle, for God to manifest fully. So now in the present age, obviously, there's questions of trust. So it has to be in seeking out individual people whom we engage with and feel the knowledge of God, Guru Tattva, the representative of the Shastra, the knowledge in the Shastra. And it's a question of prayer and application of that prayer in terms of hearing and developing relationships. And therefore, the samskaras have to be changed. Not easy.
Yes. Thank you, Maharaj. It's very interesting. It's very intriguing.
Thank you so much, Vinod.
Hare Krishna.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello or ask a question?
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. This is Gautam Bhaktidas.
I will go over on. Okay. We'll see you soon. I think it's something in the 20th of March or something. Third week, there'll be a program at Govardhan's house. Okay. Anybody else say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Anjali and Alachandri. Arivo.
Arivo. Great class. Thank you.
I'm trying. I was just at Gopal Raj's today for lunch, the first time I was there. He's now moved into his new house, which is quite incredible. He really did an incredible job, and it's all about distributing prasadam. So it's perfectly constructed for that. He told me that you and your group were over there 3 times, and that was nice.
Yeah.
Can't beat Gopal Raj's cooking.
Hmm.
I mean, he cooked an eggplant sabji today that just blew my mind.
Oh,
and
yeah.
There's no chapatis in the world that are made like his. Nowhere. And his mother was there, so they had a little secret. They put a little chickpea flour in the dough. And somehow, I don't know, it's amazing. He had a great prasadam at his house.
Jai.
Great. Thank you. Anybody else want to say hello?
Haribol Maharaj, Chaitanya Priya.
Chaitanya Priya, Hare Krishna. Still in Portland.
Hare Krishna. I am in Portland,
thank
and
you.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
I missed the first part of the your presentation, your class this morning, but a question arose when you started talking about having to know the difference between the body and the soul in order to appreciate that you're not the body. So, two things came to mind. The way in which you presented that in a matter of about 3 minutes, it was so clear that a 5-year-old could understand that. But on the other hand, just like the sages that gathered to hear about transcendental life, the majority of the people in this age do not want to hear about God. So the question for me is, how do you get this message out with such clarity that can reach people who are ready to hear on a massive scale without getting into the whole problem of religion, of having to have in this age a lot of PR, a lot of facility to spread this kind of message on a large scale?
Well, first of all, America is religious.
Is what?
So, religious. Most people believe in God. In fact, there's only 2 states in the Union where the people who are not religious are more than the people who are religious. It's amazing. I mean, if you see the percentages, people are either very religious or somewhat religious. Small percentage are not religious. So God is a popular idea. And our concepts, like you say, are very, very clear. So we just have to get out there and present it in an appropriate way, and people will appreciate, you know. And then, of course, there's people that are, the people that are really anti-religious, they're really the minority. And, you know, even some of those people will still hear good philosophy. But the people that are really antagonistic to God and things, it's a vast minority. Even among liberal people, it's a vast minority. So I just think we have to read the sacred texts, we have to apply them, realize them, and then we can communicate them. That helps.
It does, and it brings me to the other extreme I was thinking, where you have a lot of religiosity, a lot of churches, you know, etc. But invariably, there is a problem of the leaders of these churches getting carried away with material considerations, and even, get involved in a situation where they're actually cheating the people and are exposed from time to time. Why this happens with so frequently, where people, you know, then get fed up. Said, look, we put our faith in this, and look what has happened here.
So we don't have to present ourselves as a religion. We can present ourselves individually as people who have authority and knowledge. That's all. And if people don't like the religion part, the church part, then they can be guided another way. But generally, once people accept a certain dogma or teachings, then they'll want some type of socialization of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll want some type of socialization of it. And you just make a proper group. Even the Catholic Church, which is so decimated by scandal, it's still popular and strong. As long as there are some people that present the tenets of Catholicism and spirituality strongly, and as long as there's like-minded people that are gathering, people will come. I mean, yes, so that's a difficulty, but it's far from an insurmountable obstacle. Okay, thank you, Chaitanya Priya.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Anyone else like to say hello? Okay, we can go for now. Thank you.